is 1900 hours UTC, so that means it is time for news to me. Here is your host, DJ Marcus.
Thanks, Samantha. I figured out the speech to text. So I grabbed Samantha there to read the intro. But hello. It's been a few days, and it's become apparent that I cannot do the show at work. As I mentioned on Mastodon, and so I thought, oh well, I'll pre-record the show. But I already wake up at 5 o'clock to get to work, and so to wake up earlier than that to record the show is a bit of an effort. So I'm sorry. I'm recording the show here just about sunrise before I head out. So thank you for being here and for hanging out and rolling with news to me for a couple of years now. You've done 2 years already. So we're going to try. I'm going to try and keep doing this. But one of the things I liked was doing the shows live. That was the most fun part. Doing a pre-recorded show can be fun if I can join in on comm and hang out and then interact while Tobe goes and does the Dubious Goals Committee and everything. But anyway, I just wanted to let you guys know that I'm still trying. It's just I've made news lists every day, but then I just can't. I either can't break away from work, or have meetings, or something else happens. So anyway, that is all I got to say about that. Yeah. Da-da-da-da.
Let's get the show going.
All right, Karen. How do we start the show?
World News.
Ah, well, pretty close. Yeah, if you're listening and you want to check out the stories and you don't have time to listen to the whole show, you can go to tx0.org/1cl. This is not... These characters should not be in a URL shortener. I don't know what software is powering this, but dubious characters like 0, 1, I, L, P and Q, if you can help it, lowercase versions anyway. All of these are very hard to discern. Let me see if I can't use a different font. Oh, you know what? If I tell the speech to text to say it, it'll say it. And it'll say it properly.
To see the news, you can also go to https://tx0.org/1cl.
There we go. That's all lowercase. tx0.org/1cl. And that will help you get going. Alright, so on to the world news. Might sneeze. If I do, sorry. Tunisian Navy rescued 194 illegal migrants intercepted at sea while crossing the Mediterranean. According to... Excuse me. Hopefully I stopped the microphone in time. Alright. The Tunisian Navy announced the rescue of 194 illegal migrants intercepted at sea while crossing the Mediterranean, heading to Europe. According to Tuesday's announcement, the rescue involved 9 different operations during 2 days. Most migrants are Tunisian, and 76 originated from sub-Saharan Africa countries, including 42 women and 8 children. Of course, if you're doing the math with me, 50 people were from the south, and 76 are from Tunisia. So, not quite 194. On Monday, 8 bodies of migrants, probably Tunisians, who had been missing for a fortnight, were recovered from the sea. According to official figures, since the beginning of the year, more than 22,500 migrants have been intercepted. Of these, nearly 11,000 originated from sub-Saharan Africa. According to European agency Frontex, the Central Mediterranean route was used by more than 42,500 migrants from January to July, an increase of 44% compared to the first 7 months of 2021. One of the surprises to me, it was a news story yesterday, so I don't have it pulled up here, but was there's a large increase in Indian migrants into the U.S. through Mexico. And there was a nice little think piece on that. So migration and people trying to get into Western countries where the benefit of exploitation is found is high. In France, French oil workers vote to continue strike. Striking French oil workers have voted to continue their industrial action, which has led to shortages at fuel stations across the country. They responded angrily after the government said it would use mandatory powers to force some of them back to work. The strike, in its third week, has shut six of France's seven oil refineries. With long queues of cars now a regular sight at the pumps, the government wants to get the fuel flowing again. Nearly a third of French petrol stations are now reported to be running short of at least one kind of motor fuel. Unions want pay increases for workers, which they say should take account of the huge profits being made at the moment by the oil companies. They're seeking a 10% pay raise, 7% to cover inflation, and 3% for what they call wealth sharing. The government's latest move to head off the impact of the action is to requisition key staff at a refinery in Normandy, threatening prosecution unless they allow some lorry tankers to fill up. French Prime Minister Elizabeth Borne said that if no agreement could be reached between the two firms and the unions, the government would act to unblock the situation. But the hard left unions behind the stoppages see this as a threat to their right to strike and have toughened their position, calling the government's warning illegal and a choice of violence. Spokesman for the CGT, that's Charlie Golf Tango Union, said it was waiting for the government's requisition notifications and would challenge them in court. On Friday, French President Emmanuel Macron called on unions to end the strikes, but said energy companies should listen to workers' legitimate salary demands. The strike action has split opinion in France, with some commuters expressing exasperation over the fuel shortages and pointing out they need their cars for work. But at a time of growing anxiety about the cost of living and soaring profits for some energy companies, others have expressed sympathy for the strikers. So we'll see how that goes. Of course, the United States, I don't know much about labor movements outside of the U.S. I know in the U.S., if you strike long enough, they'll either send the military in to kill you, or the federal government will just fire everyone and hope that they can hire new workers. Good luck, guys, in France. In the U.S., the rail workers rejected the tentative agreement that Biden tried to push through with the railroad owners. They tried to railroad the railroad unions, if you will. That didn't go over so well. All right. Joe Biden, looking like an exceptionally old man and a guy in the background waving to the camera, both kind of make for a great little image there for this story. Let me give you an image link here because I think it's great. Let's see if we can get to... Sorry, we're just waiting for the shortener. All right, it's at tx0.org/1cm. That's tx0.org/1cm. That's Charlie Murphy. That's Charlie Mike. Let's see. Oh, you know what? We've got Daniel on the line. There you go, all lowercase, and that will get you to this image that I found to be so entertaining, because it's kind of highlights so many different things going on all at once. We've got Biden, who's most politicians, I think, besides Gerald Ford, most of the time presidents always have like big, thick, full head of hair. This one, he's looking rather old. He's doing a fist bump, which is a much more youthful greeting. So it's counterposed. Then he's doing it with a Saudi man who's wearing traditional clothes. And then there's a man in the background wearing a military uniform who appears to be waving like a small child would wave at a motorcade or something. That's Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, and he's fist bumping Joe Biden on his arrival in July. So this is an old photo that Al Jazeera is reusing. Joe Biden, the United States president, has warned Saudi Arabia that there will be consequences after a global cartel of oil-producing countries... Why would they describe it this way? Joe Biden has warned Saudi Arabia that there will be consequences after OPEC announced that they would cut oil production despite Washington's objections. His remarks on Tuesday came a day after influential Democratic Senator Bob Menendez, the chairman of Senate Foreign Relations Committee, said the U.S. must immediately freeze all cooperation with Saudi Arabia, including arms sales. There's going to be some consequences for what they've done with Russia, Biden said. I'm not going to get into what I'd consider and what I have in mind, but there will be consequences. OPEC has a lot of countries. There's several countries there, but there's 13 nations that possess about 80% of the known oil reserves. There's an infographic, but it is much too long to just say. So I'll describe what I see, and I'll have Daniel say the shortened URL when I have it. But Venezuela has 303 billion barrels on reserve. Saudi Arabia, 267 billion. Iran, 208, UAE, 111, and then Iraq has 145, and Kuwait has 101 billion barrels known. And then the remaining countries, they're too small to show up on the infographic, but Nigeria, Algeria, Libya, Angola, Gabon, Congo, East Guinea, the African, some African nations. Yeah, shout out to Iran and Venezuela holding out as people. The United States has opposition or hostile arrangements or positions with Venezuela and Iran, Saudi Arabia, Iraq. It's basically anybody who's got major oil reserves, the U.S. wants to take their oil. Anyway, last week the OPEC group said it would slash oil production targets by 2 million barrels a day. Saudi Arabia, the top exporter, said the decision aimed to stabilize the oil market, not drive up prices. But critics argued the production curbs raise oil prices globally, which generates more revenue for Russia to continue to fund its war in Ukraine, despite sanctions on its economy. The move was also seen as a diplomatic slap in the face for Biden administration as it prepares for November's midterm elections next month. This is really seen to benefit President political adversaries in the U.S., said Al Jazeera's Kimberly Halkett, reporting from Washington. High energy prices are not good for the president politically. The other reason the White House is not happy about this is the fact that this is really seen as aligning with Russia. But Saudi Foreign Minister Prince Faisal bin Farhan on Tuesday defended the move, saying it was purely economic and was taken unanimously by the organization's member states. Putin on Tuesday defended the plan cut, saying our decisions aren't directed against anyone. OPEC is cutting production to drive up price, but it is not, it isn't, they're saying that, hey, we're not doing this because we want to align with Russia, but we are cutting prices because we want to make more money, baby. Which, I mean, if anyone could understand, the U.S. can understand. Oh, wow, that was lightning fast. Alright, that's the shortened URL for the infographic that shows OPEC distribution, if you want to look at that more closely. All right, let's go to Africa for a moment. Gambia, grief, fear, and anger over deadly cough syrup. 69 Gambian children have died of acute kidney failure since July in a series of cases linked to four Indian-made cough syrups. The widening scandal has highlighted flaws in the tiny West African nation's healthcare system, in turn raising questions about potential loopholes in the world pharmaceutical trade. This reference to a small child. She couldn't eat anything. She was oozing blood from her mouth and nose. Keita, a 33-year-old car wash attendant, told AFP, recounting his daughter's suffering. At some point, I was praying for God to take her life. President Adama Barrow made a nationwide address on Saturday after the police launched an inquiry and health authorities were told to suspend the import license of a suspected company. Barrow has promised to update drug-related laws and praise the work of the health ministry in preventing further deaths. But fear and anger are mounting and death toll is rising. President Barrow should sack the health minister, but instead of sacking him, he was praising him, said Keita, the grieving father. We want justice for these children. Social media has been swamped by criticism of the healthcare system and by photos of children who've died, most of whom were under age 5. It's time for the government to step up and stop these products. If they don't, and other syrups enter the country, it will be terrible. The deaths were catapulted to global prominence last Wednesday when UN's World Health Organization issued an alert over the four syrups made by Maiden Pharmaceuticals of India. The lab tests found unacceptable amounts of diethylene glycol and ethylene glycol. Toxic impact from these substances include acute kidney injury, which may lead to death. This is also the stuff, if I remember right, ethylene glycol is what's in antifreeze. Let's search the internet and check. Okay, it's mainly used for two purposes, raw material in the manufacture of polyester fibers and for antifreeze formulations. It's an odorless, colorless, flammable, viscous liquid. Ethylene glycol has a sweet taste, but it's toxic. So, surprise, surprise. So it's killing people. Domestic critics accuse Barrow of having failed to protect the public and standing by watchdogs who should have been sacked. The opposition, United Democratic Party, criticized Barrow's 5-minute address to a traumatized nation left to wonder what other pharmaceuticals are on the market that may be fake or unsafe for use. Very sad, and there's a lot of dead kids over there in Gambia. Now in Nigeria, a soldier was arrested for stealing and selling ammunition to terrorists. A Nigerian soldier has been arrested by his colleagues for allegedly stealing and selling ammunition to criminal gangs and terrorist groups. The suspect was identified and is said to be working under the 156th Task Force Battalion in Mainok, Borno State. According to Zagazola Makama, a publication focused on the Lake Chad region, the soldier was caught in possession of ammunition on his way out of Maiduguri, the state capital. In the video shared by publication, soldiers were seen stripping the suspect of ammunition strapped to his body. His colleagues could be heard saying, "You see your life? You will go and give Boko Haram these things so that you will come and attack us in this camp? Don't worry, God pass you." According to Zagazola Makama, the suspect, who hails from Benue, regularly steals ammunition and supplies to criminal gangs across the country suspected to be bandits. So, tragic capitalism. And one more story out of Africa before we move on. The coups, the judge, and the trial. Burkinabe Bar pokes fun at chaos. In Le Procès, or the trial. Oh, that's French. Do we have a French voice? I bet you we do. Oh, Thomas is French. There we go. That's what the robot says. Or the trial. A bar in Ouagadougou. Artist and co-founder Patrick Cabré works with the crowd, raising belly laughs with his observations about Burkina Faso today. "We're debating the state of the nation. We need a judge to issue the ruling, and we have one right here," he says. Microphone in hand, Cabré has no shortage of absurd or dark material in a country where the frontier of chaos seems to come ever closer. In less than 9 months, the impoverished landlocked Sahel state has been through two military coups, each prompted by the failure of the ousted regime to tackle deadly jihadist attacks. In front of the master of ceremonies, a colossal character wearing a black and red judge's robe sways gently to music, surrounded by a score of smiling onlookers. This is bartender Dal Momin, who has abandoned his counter for a few moments. "You are at the trial. I am the judge," the gown-wearing giant tells AFP. "I serve up justice," he said, referring to beer, "in the International Criminal Court, the house's rum special. This unusual venue for free debate, music, and slam poetry first opened in 2019. After a rainy season break, it reopened on Saturday, just a week after the country's latest coup." So, kind of wild. The Dubious Goals Committee is coming up here in just about 10 minutes from now. Want to be sure and mention that and let you guys know there are a lot of great shows on Anon Radio. Just check it out. You can find a lot of it. You can find all of the schedule at anonradio.net. Or if you're in comm, you can press the equal sign. And speaking of comm, if you're listening to shows live, or if you're just listening to these shows when they air, you can check them out and have a lot of fun if you SSH over to sdf.org and then go into the Anon Radio room. Anon Radio is powered by SDF. And SDF, well, that's powered by you, so thank you for being here. One co. Yep, that's right. One Charlie Oscar. And that will take you to a map of Burkina Faso, showing the adjacent countries like Mali, Niger, Benin, Togo, Ghana, and it'll show you where the capital is, which is where this cool bar was, making fun of, making kind of gallows humor out of it all. All right, let's talk about Ukraine for just a sec. Ukraine claims new gains after days of mass Russian strikes, according to France 24. Ukraine said Wednesday it reclaimed more territory from Russia in the south while welcoming the delivery of Western air defense systems that Kyiv said would usher in a new era after mass strikes from Moscow. Russia for 2 days has pummeled Ukraine with missiles, damaging energy facilities nationwide, and attacks that Putin said were retaliation for a deadly explosion at the Crimea Bridge. Russia's FSB, that's Foxtrot Sierra Bravo Service, Security Service said Wednesday it detained 8 suspects over the blast that ripped through the road and the rail bridge connecting Crimea to Russia. It also claimed to have foiled 2 more attacks that Ukrainian special services allegedly plan to carry out. Putin has vowed a severe response to any further attack on Russia and what Moscow considers to be its territory, including the Crimea Peninsula that it annexed in 2014. Of course, you may remember it's a similar playbook to what they did for the Crimean Peninsula as they did for these other regions in France, or the regions in Ukraine, excuse me. Kyiv has neither confirmed nor denied it attacked the bridge. Despite warnings from the Kremlin, Kyiv has vowed to retake the peninsula as well as 4 regions in Ukraine's east and south that Moscow say are now parts of Russia. So, let's see. Oh yeah, France 24 coming in with the maps that aren't the Guardian likes to obfuscate its maps so that you can't copy them and just grab the image. One sec. Okay. Sorry, I'm having a time, but such is life, right? Man, that's so much faster. All right. That's right. One Charlie Papa on the tx0.org site will get you a map of Ukraine, showing where the front lines are, where the annexed places are, and where the fighting is. Kyiv said Wednesday it had retaken 5 more settlements in the southern region of Kherson, one of the 4 territories Moscow said it annexed in late September, and the latest setback for Russia's campaign. Ukrainian armed forces have liberated 5 more settlements in Berislav district of the Kherson region, the presidency said in its daily report. It added, however, that Russian forces were striking back and had continued shelling Ukraine's positions along the entire contact line. The Ukrainian army announced its counteroffensive in the south in late August. So, there's plenty more going on. The war is continuing, our battle, whatever you want to call it. Ukraine appears to be making progress. The nuclear plant, though, just as from about an hour ago, it's much later than I thought it was. Ukraine's biggest nuclear power plant, which is surrounded by Russian troops, has lost all external power needed for vital safety systems for the second time in 5 days. The head of the UN nuclear watchdog said Wednesday, calling it a deeply worrying development. The warning from the IAEA, or the International Atomic Energy Agency Director, General Rafael Grossi, came amid a flurry of developments in Russia's war in Ukraine. Ukraine's military command said its forces recaptured 5 settlements in the southern Kherson region, and Russia's main domestic security agency said 8 people had been arrested in connection with the weekend Crimea bridge blast. Grossi, who met with President Putin on Tuesday, said IAEA monitors at the Zaporizhzhia nuclear plant, Europe's largest nuclear power facility, reported the interruption in external power and said backup diesel generators were keeping nuclear safety and security equipment operational. This repeated loss of off-site power is deeply worrying development, and it underlines the urgent need for a nuclear safety and security protection zone around the site, Rossi said. Protection zone, excuse me. Ukraine's nuclear operator Energoatom said on the Telegram social media platform that a Russian missile attack on the substation in the neighboring region of the north was damaged, leading to the shutdown of a key communication line to the plant. So, scary stuff. Of course, we've got tactical nuclear risks happening in North Korea. Joe Biden warned last week the risk of nuclear Armageddon is now the highest since the Cuban Missile Crisis. Talking about tactical nuclear weapons. Such weapons are less destructive than strategic weapons designed to wipe out entire cities. But analysts worry that this talk of tactical weapons risks normalizing weapons of mass destruction. A tactical nuclear weapon will still destroy an area and irradiate it forever, or for a long time. Tactical nuclear weapons are easier to transport. And another key difference is military objective of using the weapon. In theory, the purpose of a strategic weapon is to directly target other countries to prevent them attacking, while tactical warheads are supposed to be used to aid specific battlefield objectives. Tactical nuclear weapons are seen as a more precise and more limited in their effects. The explosion takes place on the ground or at a very low altitude. The objective is to destroy infrastructure or a precise target. The effects can be limited to a radius of a few hundred meters to a few kilometers. But tactical weapons are still a last resort. So, anyway, it's very scary times. We're going to run out of time because I talked too much. The cop who shot a kid in a McDonald's parking lot while he was eating is arrested and got fired. There were dozens of children in a hospital in Pennsylvania after a gas leak in a daycare. And NASA says the DART mission was successful, and Japan's, the Epsilon 6 rocket launch in Japan is the failure of the Epsilon 6 rocket launch in Japan is the first in nearly 20 years. Japan's space agency says the unmanned rocket carrying satellites had to be aborted with a self-destruct command minutes after takeoff. The failure of the rocket on Wednesday, which was not in the right position to orbit Earth, and had to be aborted less than 7 minutes into its flight, marks Japan's first failed rocket launch in 20 years. Okay, they're just saying it over and over. Anyway, that's all the time we got. Please enjoy the Dubious Goals Committee, and I will try my best to do this again tomorrow and get back on a schedule. For listening, enjoy the Dubious Goals Committee.